Thank you again, everyone, for coming along this afternoon. It's just going to be a very brief chat. We won't talk for hours and hours and hours, though I'm sure we could. Yeah, Steve can. I've just realised this is the first time I've actually seen a physical copy of this book, although I read it last year and very much enjoyed it. So I echo Jason's sentiments to buy a copy. And buy a second copy, get Steve to sign it, and then at some point in the future when you meet someone you think would like it, you'll have a signed copy to give them.
Or put it on eBay.
Yeah. And you'll say, thank you, past me. Okay, so Steve, you've been writing and publishing spec fiction since the about mid-1980s when you were five, and you've also written a lot of non-fiction articles and done interviews, done work on the Encyclopedia of Australian Science Fiction. What is it that attracts you to the genres of fantasy and science fiction and horror?
You know, I think first and foremost it's the sense of wonder. I read widely. I read mystery and detective fiction and non-fiction and, you know, thrillers. But I probably enjoy reading science fiction, fantasy and horror the most, because I think it takes me to places that are weird and wonderful. I have a particular like for ghost stories and horror stories. I'm not into, you know, violence, slasher, bloody horror. I like, I guess, what you could call quiet horror, but also have a bit of a fascination, as Jason mentioned, for H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu mythos, which a lot of people call cosmic horror. It's like, you know, what's really out there, and you know, and some of it's scary shit, and or potentially, and so it's that sense of wonder that draws me to this genre.
And Shadows on the Wall is a genre collection. It's also a retrospective, though. As mentioned, it does have, I think, three new stories.
Yes.
But the oldest story was first published in 1987. And I just have to ask, can you tell us a little bit how you went about selecting the stories?
It was a fairly simple process. I've been writing for a long time, and these stories, particularly the older ones, have appeared in various books and magazines around the world. And they sort of have a short life. They have a short shelf life. Stories, you know, disappear, you know, books go out of print. And a publisher suggested to me, you know, why don't you put together, you know, a best of? And I'm not sure that necessarily a best of, but what I did was go through all the stories that I have published and pick the ones that I like best. You know, some of the very early ones, you know, they were journey work and, you know, they were important for me at the time, but they didn't quite make the cut. Because what I wanted to do was to present here, you know, the best that I could. So that's what I did.
Did you do any revision to the older stories? Was it tempting to update them?
Absolutely. You know, look, I'm an inveterate rewriter. I don't read my old work very often, but even when I'm reading a story that I'm working on, and even when it first comes out in a book and I reread it, I kind of go, oh, I should have changed that word and could have done with a comma here. I needed to delete that line. But with those older stories, I took them because, you know, I've hopefully learnt more now. I mean, writing it's a craft, and the more you do it, the more you learn, and I'm still learning. But I could see in those early stories that there were things that I could improve. I could tighten them up. I could add some more suspense. You know, and sometimes it's just a word here, you know. Picking the right word can make an enormous amount of difference. So, yes, I reworked all of those old stories. And for a few of them, I actually workshopped them with a writer friend. We sat down and went through them. So even if you happen to have read some of these stories in their original incarnations, I think you'll find that they're fresher here and hopefully better.
Fair enough. And with the three that haven't been previously published, did you write them with this collection in mind, or were they just floating out there in the ether on them on their own?
Funnily enough, there is a kind of theme running through the collection, but that wasn't at the front of my mind. What actually happened was that I wrote a novelette and submitted it to a publisher who were publishing novelettes as e-books, and it's the last story in the collection, and it's one that I'm very proud of. And I submitted it to this publisher, and he said, you know, we'd really like to publish this, but hey, how about instead of publishing it as a standalone novelette, why don't we do a collection? Why don't you write a few more news stories for us and, you know, go back and pick, you know, your favourite stories from your previously published work, which is what I did. But there is a kind of, you know, theme, loose theme running through it, and the title, Shadows on the Wall, kind of reflects that a bit. I mean, there are actual shadows in the book. In two of the stories, there is a shadow that pursues one of the characters. And in another story, an ancient brass oil lamp casts shadows on the walls that leads to portals, if you like. So while there are some physical shadows in there, you know, there are shadows over a lot of the stories. And I'm making it sound dark, and you know, there is darkness here. There is some horror here. But there's also light and hope and there's love of family and love of children. So amongst the darkness and the ghosts and the monsters, you know, I hope that you'll find some redeeming features for people.
Well, I mean, indeed, one of the longer stories in there is called Harold the Hero and the Talking Sword, which is an out-and-out romp. And hilarious. But you wrote that in collaboration with Jack Dann, who is a noted science fiction and fantasy author. And I wanted to ask you, what was it like writing a story with someone else?
It was an interesting experience. what actually happened with that particular story? Jack Dann was invited to submit to an anthology, and he had written a story called The Talking Sword. And he submitted it to this publisher and they said, you know, look, we love this story, but it's got a few problems. It's not long enough and it's meant to be about dynamic duos and there's really only one main character in this story. Jack and I had been looking for a project to work on for some time and we're sitting down over a cup of coffee or a glass of wine or something and we were talking about it and I started bouncing some ideas off what to do and he said, why don't you write it? You know, so take my original Harold story and expand it. So I wrote this, if you like, expanded the story to double the length. I took his original, so his original work stands there. So I wrote that, passed it back to him. You know, he did a draft, passed it back to me. We had a couple of phone calls. It was a lot of fun. It was really fun, and we're very happy with the result. I have tried collaborating with other writers before. It doesn't always work.
No.
And, you know, if a collaboration works well, you get something better than what each of the individual writers could have done. But if a collaboration doesn't work, it can be a mess. In this case, I'm happy to say that we both think it's a great story. So, and it is funny. So there is humour in the book too.
It's very funny. It's laugh out loud funny. And look, this is a really, really unfair question because it's like asking parents about their kids. But do you have a favourite story in the book?
You know, my favourite story is always the one that I'm working on at the moment. Right, so because this book has been published, I'm working on a children's time travel series at the moment, so that's my current favourite. But, you know, to go back and answer your question, I think my favourite story in the book is probably the last story. It's a novelette. It's quite long. And I think why I like it is I have a sort of a fascination with India, with the country, the geography, the culture, you know, the food. And I had an idea for a story and I just happened to be one time, I've been to India quite a few times, and one time I was outside Delhi, I think it's called the Asian Educational Booksellers. You go into this, it's like a cavern, and it's full of leather-bound books that they have collected. A lot of them, they're old books, they're in the public domain, they've found them scattered across India, and they had this book called Travels in India by Leopold von Orlik that was written, you know, in the mid-18th century. And I was reading that and I kind of got the idea of using that era and also using that language and structure. It's quite dense compared to a lot of my other writing and I found it challenging but also found it exhilarating. And it's kind of a mashup almost because I have taken some of von Orlik's public domain. it's absolutely my story, but if you were to go and read Von Ulrich's original thing, you will see echoes of it. So I hope it works. So that's my favourite. Today. If you ask me tomorrow, could be a different story.
Fair enough. Now, you already mentioned H.P. Lovecraft as an influence on your work, and you have written a few Cthulhu mythos stories over the years. What other authors or books or films or whatever do you draw inspiration from?
Oh, that's really hard because I read a lot. Look, I have to say Stephen King. In my formative years, I loved Stephen King and just devoured, everything he wrote. Like some things more than others. I like his early short stories a lot. I love his Dark Tower series. I love, The Talisman. I love Salem's Lot. I still read him. I don't like as much some of the stuff he writes now, but I think he was a big influence. But as Jason mentioned earlier, some of the stories are science fiction as well. And so I used to enjoy writers like Philip K. Dick and J.G. Ballard and Brian Aldiss. And I don't know if you know any of these writers, but if you don't, go and search out their books. I highly recommend them. So these are books that were being published, I guess, in the 70s and 80s. So they're not necessarily the newer writers. But the reason I mention them is that they gave me the desire to want to write myself. And I'm not for a moment suggesting that I'm writing anywhere near as good as what they can. And you probably won't see stories necessarily in their styles. But they had a huge formative impact on me as a young writer.
Bring it a bit closer to home. You've been in Ballarat for a couple of years. Just bought a house, though, so I guess you're not going anywhere soon.
Oh, I love Ballarat. Love it here.
What brought you to the city, and what is it you like living in Ballarat?
I like a lot of things about Ballarat. I came here just to see if I liked it. My daughter and grandchildren live here. It's an opportunity to spend some time with them because Melbourne's not that far away, but I lived right out in the Dandenong, so it was a bit of a trek. So I thought I'd come here and rent for a year and see how I liked it. And I just fell in love with the place. There's a vibrant arts culture. There's a really active writing community. There's quite a lot of writers writing in all genres, but particularly the genres that I'm interested in. The cafes are great. It's got good pubs. And I also love, particularly around the centre of town, I love, the old buildings and the architecture. And best of all, I love that I can get across town in 10 minutes. Doesn't matter what time of day it is.
No, when Jason and I first moved here, we spent the first year being half an hour early for everything. Because we couldn't get it through our heads that it was just 10 minutes to town. It's like, really? That seems like it should be longer. And can you see yourself maybe writing a story set in Ballarat or a Ballarat-esque location if you didn't want to actually name the city?
Oh, look, absolutely. I don't know about other writers, but I've always got about 5 books in my head that I plan to write. And there's a novel that I wanted to write, a young adult novel that was set in Melbourne in 1891. And funnily enough, that book's now moving from Melbourne to Ballarat in my head. So hopefully you'll see that coming out in a couple of years if all things go well.
But that's not what you're working on at the moment?
No, at the moment I'm working on... So I don't know if people are familiar with Jack Dann. He was an American science fiction writer, very active in the US in the 70s and 80s. He moved to Australia about 25 years ago and has become a great mate. And as we mentioned before, I collaborated with him on the Harold the Hero and the Talking Sword, which is in Shadows on the Wall. And currently we're working on a children's time travel chapter book series. It's for young kids. It's probably 7 to 9-year-olds. We've written the first book. Jack's got a New York agent. I could never get a New York agent. So he sent it off to his agent and we've got good feedback. So we're having... It's a lot of fun. So that's... the current project that I'm working on.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
We might actually just leave it there so people can go off and get more drinks. I see a lot of empty glasses. And, of course, buy a book or 2 or 3 if you haven't already grabbed one.
Grandmas, aunties, uncles, children, your neighbour, I'm sure they'll all enjoy it.
So thank you again for coming. And don't forget to get Steve to sign the books and make him work for it. And thank you all. And thank you, Steve. I believe you wanted to say a few words.
Yeah, look, I just wanted to say thank you. First and foremost, thank you all very, very much for coming today. Those of you that have bought the book, thanks a lot. I hope you enjoy it. A big thank you to Jason and Kirsten for hosting today. They put a lot of work into this, and I really appreciate that. To Nigel for this excellent venue. It's a fantastic little place, and I didn't know it was under here. So thank you, Nigel. And look, there are a lot of people I should thank, and I actually forgot my thank you list, which is probably very good. So I should also thank Jerry Huntman and IFWG, who was the publisher of this book. Jerry is a Melbourne guy. He's a writer himself, and some years ago he bought an American publishing company, a small press called IFWG. He was a part owner in it. He bought out his US partners, moved the headquarters to Melbourne, and he's passionate about publishing, but he's particularly passionate about publishing Australian writers. He publishes, you know, children's fiction, young adult fiction, and genre fiction. And the thing is, with a short story collection, a lot of the big publishers simply won't touch them because they're never going to be bestsellers, although lots of people enjoy them. And if it's not for independent publishers like Jerry, and there are quite a few independent publishers in Australia, so do try and support independent publishers because they're allowing a voice to writers who may not otherwise have been able to get their work published by the big publishers. I mean, my children's book was published by a big publisher. It's published in multiple language editions, and that's fabulous, but I would have struggled to find a home for this book with a big publisher. So I am very grateful to Jerry, so I just wanted to thank him. And also, when you read, there's sort of a section at the front where, you know, some sort of praise where people have written kind words about the book, including Kirsten and Jason. I want to thank all those people. I think, you know, the view of a writer is that, you know, you sit away in a garret somewhere with a pen and paper or a typewriter or a computer or whatever, and you work away on your own. And that's true. But, and this is a really important but, in order to get a work published, you have to have a lot of other people support you. You have to find a publisher who believes in you. There are readers that you have that read your work and provide your feedback. There are, you know, proofreaders and editors for the publisher, and they often go unsung. So this is my book, it's my work, but it absolutely would not have appeared without that. And some people choose to go down the self-publishing road, and that's a very valid road for a lot of writers. But it's hard work because when you become a self-publisher, you have to do everything yourself. You have to, you know, get your cover designed, you have to do your typesetting, you have to do your proofreading, you have to do the editing. And while you might subcontract some of that out as a self-publisher, it costs to do. And, of course, then you've got to format it as an e-book and put it out there. It's enormously time-consuming. I've got a lot of, you know, respect for people. I can't do it, and so I'm very lucky to have found a great publisher to publish this book. So that's all I want to do. Thank you all very much today for coming, and for those of you who've bought the book, you know, I really hope you enjoy it. Thanks, Jason. Thank you, Kirsten. Thank you, everyone.